So apart from all the obscure and disturbing impressions that the day had brought, we now had the difficult task of filling 1.5 days of nothingness. We began to make hesitant acquaintances. Hesitant because none of us knew whether any of the others was a Nazi or not, and so caution was necessary. Some people openly tried to strike up with the SA men, but they maintained a proud reserve toward their civilian colleagues. They clearly thought of themselves as a sort of aristocracy here in the camp. On the other hand, I started looking for faces that did not have a Nazi air. But could you rely on mere physiognomy? I felt uncomfortable and indecisive. Then someone spoke to me. I glanced at him quickly. He had a normal, open, blonde face, but sometimes one saw such faces beneath SA caps. "I have the feeling that I've met you before," he said, stumbling a little because he started to say Z and had to change to Du. "I'm not sure," I said. "I have a bad memory for faces. Are you, stumbling in the same way, a Berliner too?" "Yes," he said, and introduced himself with a little civilian bow. I also gave my name, and then we tried to find out where we might have met. That provided a safe topic of conversation for about 10 minutes. Once we had determined that we really could not have met anywhere, silence descended. We cleared our throats. "Well, anyway," I said, "then we have met here." "Yes," he said. Silence. "Is there a canteen anywhere around here?" I asked. "Shall we have a cup of coffee?" "Why not?" he said. We both avoided addressing each other directly. "One has to do something after all," I said. Then tentatively, "Funny setup here, isn't it?" He looked sideways at me and answered even more carefully, "I haven't formed a definite impression yet. Rather military, eh?" We looked for the canteen, had coffee, and offered each other cigarettes. The conversation dragged on. We avoided saying "you," and we avoided saying anything compromising. It was a strain. "Do you play chess?" he asked at last, correcting himself from Z to Du. "A little," I said. "Shall we play a game?" "I haven't played for a long time," he said, "but there seem to be chess boards here. We can give it a try." We borrowed a chess set at the bar and started to play. I tried to remember what I could of opening theory. I had not played for a long time, not for many years, and looking at the pieces and the development of the game irresistibly brought back a long-vanished era, when I had been an ardent chess player. My first student years, 1926, 1927, and the atmosphere of the period, with all its youthful, unquestioning radicalism, its freedom and spontaneity, its open, heated discussions, its laughter and its exuberance. For a moment I saw myself sitting here like a stranger, 7 years older, and playing chess again, for want of anything better to do, with an opponent I did not know, but had to address with the familiar Du, in a strange, remote place to which I had been ordered to go without knowing what for. I felt the humiliation, and also the outlandishness of my position, as I carefully moved a pawn to prepare for castling. A giant Hitler portrait stared sullenly down at me from the wall. The radio crackled in the corner. Military music, as usual. 6 or 8 people were sitting at other tables, smoking and drinking coffee. The others were probably strolling around the camp. The windows were open. Autumn sunlight slanted in. Suddenly the radio broke off. The banal march tune that had been playing seemed to stop with one foot in the air. There was a strained silence in which we still waited for the foot to make contact with the ground. Instead, an oily-voiced announcer said, "Achtung! Achtung! Here is a special announcement from the wireless service." We both looked up from our game, but avoided looking at each other. It was Saturday, October the 13th, 1933, and it was the announcement that Germany had walked out of the disarmament conference and resigned from the League of Nations. The announcer used the style of speech that had been introduced by Goebbels. He had the oily smoothness of a trainee actor playing a conspirator. There were a lot of other special announcements. The Reichstag was dissolved. Yes, the harmless, docile Reichstag, which had given Hitler every dictatorial power. For what reason? At the new election there would only be one party, the NSDAP, that is, the Nazis. This still astonished me, in spite of all I had experienced. An election where there was no choice? An audacious idea. I glanced briefly at my opponent's face. It was as non-committal as he could possibly make it. The parliaments of the Länder were also dissolved, but they would not be re-elected. This piece of news was an anticlimax after the others, and seemed uninteresting, even though it entailed the end of such historical entities as Prussia and Bavaria. Hitler would make a speech to the German people that evening. My God, one would probably have to listen to that here, in public, with everyone else. After that special announcement of the wireless service, we returned to our regular program of music. Da-dum-da-da, da-dum-da-da. No one jumped up and shouted, "Heil!" or "Hooray!" Nothing else happened either. Burkhardt bent his face so low over the pieces that he gave the impression that nothing in the world interested him as much as our game. At the other tables, people sat in silence and blew the smoke from their cigarettes, their serious faces giving nothing away. But there was so much to say. I felt sick with contradictory emotions. I was happy that now the Nazis had obviously gone too far, and I felt a despairing rage that I was caught on the wrong side, and I felt disappointed because the cause of the Nazis' downfall would be something where they were really in the right. The good old Republicans had also all wanted equal rights and the freedom to arm, and that in itself would have been quite all right. I noted with impotent irritation their cunning combination of a vote of confidence with a motion that nobody could disagree with, while the announcements of elections, at which there would be only one party to vote for, left me quite speechless, helplessly searching for some expression adequate to express their colossal effrontery and provocation. All that cried out for expression and discussion. Instead, I said, "Quite a lot at once, don't you think?" "Yes," said Burkhardt, bent over the game. "The Nazis never take half measures." Ha! He'd given himself away. He'd said, "Nazis." If you said, "the Nazis," that meant you were not one of them. He was someone you could talk to. "I think they'll fall flat on their faces this time," I began eagerly. He looked up with an expression of total incomprehension. He had probably noticed that he had given himself away. "Difficult to tell," he said. "By the way, I think you're going to lose your bishop." In his confusion, he used the formal Z. "Do you think so?" I said, also using Z, and tried to concentrate on the game. I had lost my thread. We ended our game with no further conversation, except the occasional check or garde. That evening we all sat in the same canteen and listened to Hitler speechifying on the radio while his giant portrait stared sullenly down at us. The dominant figures were the SA men, laughing or nodding at the appropriate places almost as well as the members of the Reichstag. We sat or stood closely packed, and this closeness contained a horrible confinement. I was more at the mercy of the words that came from the loudspeaker than usual, packed in between neighbours whose opinions I could not be sure of. Some of us were obviously enthusiastic, most were inscrutable. Only one person spoke, the invisible man in the radio. The worst came when he had finished. A fanfare signalled the national anthem, and we all raised our arms. A few hesitated like me, it was so dreadfully shaming, but did we want to sit our examinations or not? For the first time I had the feeling, so strong it left a taste in my mouth. This doesn't count, this isn't me, it doesn't count. And with this feeling I too raised my arm and held it stretched out ahead of me for about 3 minutes. That is the combined length of Deutschland über alles and the Horst Wessel song. Most of us sang along, droning jerkily. I moved my lips a little and mimed singing, as one does with hymns in church. But we all had our arms stretched out, and in this pose we stood facing the radio set, which had pulled these arms out like a puppeteer manipulates the arms of his marionettes, and we all sang, or pretended to do so, each one of us the Gestapo of the others.